I think you're fine. There you go. I would like to call to order the Public Engagement Commission of the City of Goleta for Thursday, December 13, 2018. First thing to do is Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Commissioner Mannion. Commissioner Uribe is absent. Commissioner Ibarra.
Present.
Commissioner Schneider.
Present.
Commissioner Massey.
Here.
Vice Chair Bliss.
Here.
Chair Paz.
Here. We don't have any public speakers, so we will move on. We can go to the consent calendar, approval of the Public Engagement Commission meeting minutes for October 10th, 2018. Someone have any additions, deletions, edits? No? Someone might like to make the motion to approve?
I move we approve the minutes.
I second.
Motion made by Ms. Massey and seconded by Mr. Ibarra. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Oh.
We're moving along. Brings us to discussion action item, charter city versus general law city form of government. And we are to consider recommendation whether it's advantageous to the city to change the city's form of government from general law city to a charter city, and recommend to the city council whether the city should continue exploring this question.
Thank you, Commission. It brings me great pleasure to bring this report. It is a pretty complex issue of charter city versus general law city. As you recall, we had a very kind of an overview brief discussion right about when the PEC was formed, and we were talking at that time about compensation for the council. And at that time, the issue of whether we needed to be a charter city in order to increase the compensation of council was a question, and we quickly were able to answer that question and then move into the ballot measure that was recently passed with this election. But what other advantages or disadvantages are there to charter cities? And this report tries to summarize that very complex question. And if you recall that one of the questions that this commission is exploring is that should the city of Goleta be a general law city? And this came out of the settlement agreement with the District Elections Committee back in May of 2017, which again is a question that's in the resolution for the Public Engagement Commission to consider. And in forming this question, the DEC is generally interested in the advantages that exist in becoming a charter city as we go into the 2022 elections, the district elections. And what they are trying to explore is, does it make sense for the city of Goleta to become a charter city before going into district elections? And we'll talk a little bit more about where they're coming from when they ask that question to be part of that settlement agreement. So we'll be talking about the authority in a general law city versus a charter city. I'll give you just a brief overview of the home rule and municipal affairs, talk about what statewide concerns mean, the benefits and detriments of becoming a charter city, or maybe more fairly advantages and disadvantages, DEC's interest in charter versus general law. So we'll talk a little more detail of what they were looking at and the experience that was shared by our speaker. Her name slipped my mind, but she came to speak to us at our last meeting. Jacqueline Inda, yes, thank you. Jacqueline Inda. And then we'll go into some questions and discussions and deliberation. So in the next slide, you have the list of 121 California charter city. So of the 482 total cities in California, 361 are general law and 121 are charter cities. So as you see, the majority of cities still remain under the general law principles. So both types of cities possess broad police powers under Article 10, Section 7 of the California Constitution to legislate for public health, safety, and welfare. However, the exercise of police powers is subject to general laws of the state, meaning that the state legislature may override or preempt local laws adopted pursuant to the police power, and this is true of general law. So in a general law city, it exercises powers granted by state statutes and the state constitution. It also exercises police power, which has statutory and constitutional limits. A charter city exercises the powers of a general law city as well. The state constitution treats a charter city's regulation of municipal affairs as equal to state law. And so we'll talk about what municipal affairs mean. Power over municipal affairs are limited by state and federal constitutions and the charter. So how is it possible that charter cities are able to create their own charter? Well, there's an understanding of this home rule provision. And in your packet, as one of the attachments, you were given some background on the home rule provision. So the California Constitution gives cities the ability to adopt a home rule charter. And this is where the name the charter cities came from. The benefits of having a charter is that it gives the city authority over municipal affairs. Well, what are municipal affairs? So it gives the power over municipal affairs at a local level. So if something is not of statewide concern, if it's not statewide, if it's in a local issue, it's considered a municipal affair.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Just a clarifying question. So under the second page of our, not the PowerPoint, but the handout, it says says a number two under the Constitution, subgovernment, or in all or part of a city. Is the subgovernment part all the functions that come after that? So governance and elections, finance, planning, land use, public contracts, prevailing wage, all those pieces, that's what it's referring to in that particular section?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
So the home rule authority enhances local control beyond what is afforded by those police powers because it allows charter cities to supersede the state laws as to these local matters. Conversely, however, charter cities have no greater authority than general law cities as to matters deemed of statewide concern. So one of the things that we've been seeing, however, is that we'll go into it into the next slide. So what is a municipal affair? So the term municipal affair is not really defined. It gets defined by our court system when a matter comes before the court and it's decided whether this is a statewide concern or a local concern. So then whether it remains to be a municipal affair or if the court may expand it to have the meaning of statewide concern. So as Chair Paz noted, there is a non-exclusive list of four categories that are, by definition, municipal affairs. And if you look at page 2 of your staff report, these categories are listed as the regulation of the city police force, subgovernment in all or part of a city, conduct of city elections, and the manner in which municipal officers are elected. So following in that paragraph, you see some more classifications of municipal affairs, such as a municipal election matters, procedures for initiative, referendum, and recall, procedures for adopting ordinances and resolutions, compensation of city officers and employees, and so on goes the list. And so this is in these areas, these are considered municipal affairs, so therefore a charter city would be able to regulate that independent from what the state code may say. And one of the advantages that a charter city see then is that they can make regulations over these areas. So let's take one that we're familiar with, compensation of city officers and employees. So this Public Engagement Commission was very well involved in the compensation of the city council. But we had to follow the state government code, and the government code says that you shall do this by election, and with the majority of the voters going with whatever the majority of the voters said in this compensation issue. In a charter city, you may see that the charter would allow for the local government to provide a compensation for their city council. And some of the examples that we saw that were presented to you during that compensation report was that some charter cities may still take that issue up with the voters, but they're not required to unless in their process they've required their government to do that. But they would do that through their charter and then through following ordinances and resolutions. So that's where in a situation like ours, it's the compensation where it's different. General law cities are required to follow the government code. A charter city can provide its own regulations over that because the compensation is considered a municipal affair. Does that make sense for a charter city? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. The legislature may not determine what is a municipal affair nor transform a municipal affair into a matter of statewide concern. And what that means is that the legislature may not decide on its own what is a municipal affair. These matters generally get decided by the government. By the courts. So if there's an issue at hand and it is being challenged, it's the courts that then decide. And that's why the concept, as you see, is one of the on the presentation. The concept is fluid. Fluid and changes over time. And one of the examples that was given in this report is that of, for example, prevailing wage. And we'll talk about that specifically. There is a manner in which the legislature has interrupted this issue of prevailing wage by the laws that they're setting, but they can't require charter cities they can't force charter cities to set a prevailing wage or to honor prevailing wage, but they may build laws around it, regulations around it, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So some examples of municipal affairs is regarding elections, and municipal affairs says that it would offer to conduct of city elections and election procedures. Municipal affairs allow city council members, a charter city, to determine the city council member qualifications. It would allow for the criteria for vacating and terminating city offices. And this is the one where the DEC is really interested in is what is the criteria? Well, for a general law city, the criteria is we follow state government code. And going into district elections, it'll leave some gaps in some of the questions that may come up. But for a general law city, it's very specific to the state government code. For a charter city, then the charter city can develop its criteria for vacating and terminating city offices. Municipal affairs regarding elections also includes city funding of public officers and candidate campaigns. The local government can, under a charter city, can create its own rules regarding that. Again, a general law city like the city of Goleta would be required to follow the elections code. I'll skip to the next one. I'm not sure about that last one. Okay, municipal affairs regarding finance. So these are some of the areas that we're looking at. The elections was one, finance was looking. What I'm looking for is generally how does the municipal affairs issue impact different operations in our city? So with regard to finance, for the a local government may have the right to tax for municipal purposes, such as a license tax on local businesses and occupations, a property transfer tax. So a property transfer tax is something that you'd see through a real estate transaction. The charter city may have a property transfer tax of that effect. A general law city would not have the ability to do that, so we're limited. So what the report is telling you is that under a municipal affair, which is a matter of municipal of local government, if you're a charter city, you can have that type of tax. So there are some advantages in becoming a charter city. I don't know that analysis doesn't show, like, how would that benefit Goleta at this time. We didn't go that deep into the analysis. Basically, this is an overview that in the finance area, there would be an opportunity for additional revenue. What that is yet, it's not yet determined. The government code regulates general law cities and what type of taxation and the processes that it has to go through in order to impose these type of taxes. Let's just go back to the next one. All new taxes, including in charter cities, must be subjected to voter approval. So although a charter city may impose taxes, it does have to go through a voting process. Planning and use, land use is another area in which you will see some differences between general law cities and charter cities. So planning and land use is generally a municipal affair, so that the state planning and land use law generally does not apply to a charter city. Zoning regulations do not apply to a charter city, and zoning does not need to be consistent with the general plan in a charter city, although you will see in charter cities that they are consistent. It'd be, you know, the general plan is really that large overview of what is the city's plan, what will the city look like, what does our development look like, what is our recreation needs, what is our future plan going forward. And you want those to be consistent with the zoning plan, but in a charter city it doesn't. For a general law city, it does have to be consistent. So this was an interesting one. I put that bullet point that, however, the state continues to look at ways to control local land use. And there was a case cited in the in your report, in that it showed that while charter cities are not required to have the same, they can have local control, state legislature is still imposing other regulations that charter cities are kind of forced to follow. It's a, if you don't do this, then you can't get that. I don't recall what page it is in that report. Okay. So on page 6 of your report, it talks about SB 1333, and it states that it further limited the authority of charter cities regarding planning and land use, and it gives you an example of how it did that. Page 6 of your staff report. So if you read through that, it basically says that charter cities are required, still have to comply with the same rules as general law cities in the general plan, must contain mandatory elements. Zoning hearing procedures are a requirement and adhere to limitations. So again, legislature does narrow that gap between the differences of a general law city and a charter city. Some matters of statewide concern. So now we're talking about when it's a statewide concern, a charter city's regulations must follow the state's government code. So we have to be consistent in these areas. Some examples of that are listed there for you. A general plan's mandatory elements, I read that to you. That's part of the staff report. Zoning hearing procedures, those have to be consistent with what general law cities do as well. Requirements for low and moderate income housing with special zones. Time limitations to respond to plan conditional use reviews. Standards for approving housing developments, and so on and so forth. So again, this is an example of how in the planning and land use area, these would be matters of statewide concern, and so would be consistent between the two cities, type of cities. In public contracts and prevailing wages, this is another example where you see that narrowing of
of the differences between the two types of cities. When we talk about the prevailing wage issue, for example, charter cities are not required to have a prevailing wage, general law cities. However, SB 7, and that was passed, I believe, in 2014, SB 7 then said, okay, well, charter cities, you're prohibited from receiving state funding for a construction project if your charter doesn't require comply with prevailing wage. So that's another example where the legislation is narrowing that gap or the, you know, the differences. In employment and compensation, municipal affairs, you'll see collective bargaining with represented labor groups. So the charter cities can develop the rules regarding the collective bargaining and collective bargaining procedures. It allows a charter city to create its appointments, qualifications, compensation, and removal of city employees. And still both the charter and general law cities have to follow certain regulations, but it gives more expansion for flexibility for a charter city. We talked about council member salaries, expense reimbursements, and benefits, so a charter city can create its own regulations around that. There are some state, for example, the public employees retirement system, there are going to be some state regulations that are going to require overall that that benefits and certain benefits and certain regulations are met for and be equal. But in most cases, a charter city can develop its own salaries and expense reimbursements. And, you know, you got that report on the compensation and the process that general law cities have to go through, you know, the voter approval and so on and so forth. So those are some of the, when you look at some of the differences. So one of the things, before we go into the processes, I'll give you a very, another recent example of a difference. So and the challenge in really doing the research for this type of report. Recently, internally here, we've been discussing the Library Board of Trustees, and we recently City Council passed an ordinance approving five members, passed an ordinance for the bylaws and the formation of the Library Board of Trustees. And the way that it was formed was as an advisory group to the City Council. Well, we recently found out that the education code requires or gives an authority to this Library Board of Trustees to hire, fire, purchase real estate property. It has a high level of authority, not of advisory, but of but gives them the power to make these decisions. Well, according to the education code, So we're working on creating a new ordinance, because that was not the intent of the council, to give this advisory group, the intended advisory group, the power to hire, fire, and make real estate deals. So we're working on that. But what we found out in this issue and how timely it is that in looking at that issue of the Library Board of Trustees and the powers of, we found that general law cities, because we were looking at the city of Santa Barbara and we thought, well, why does the city of Santa Barbara have this advisory made of citizens, like, or this board of trustees made of citizens? And the same thing we were aiming, why are they not concerned about that issue? Well, they're a charter city, and the education code for Library Board of Trustees says that you're exempt from this code if you're a charter city. And so it's not, sometimes you come across this by this type of research. We're looking at something else and we found, oh, but if we were a charter city, we'd be exempt to it. So it's not so easy. I think what I've shown you here is kind of a broad picture of municipal affairs and areas in which there are advantages. We know that the window is narrowing, but sometimes when we really need to know a very specific issue, like what the DEC is looking at, the DEC, that's when we can do some very specific analysis. So this is just kind of a broad overview, but there's going to be examples that if we really need to know. We know about compensation already. We know about the Library Board of Trustees. And there's some other various matters we know of, but we don't know everything yet. I think that just takes a matter of additional analysis or saying, what about this? Or what about that? Having those very specific issues. So I just wanted to give you an example of right now, real time, what was one of those things that we came across as, oh, okay, well, if we were a charter city, then we wouldn't have to worry about that. But we're not. We're a general law city. Is it? Does that mean that it's worth it to become a charter city? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that one instance would it be. With the narrowing gap of the differences, it's hard to say that. The other thing that I wanted to discuss with you was the process for approving a charter. So one of the things that we did find is that it can be a pretty intense process. So the government code requires that if we're going to become a charter city, the city council can look at this two ways. One is by creating a charter commission. And so the council would call for an election. So this is an election process. This would take some time to go through and some expense. But the council would call for an election to select the members of the commission. The commission would prepare a proposed charter. And then the charter would be submitted to the council, and then the council would submit it to the voters. So there would be two elections in that process. One is to appoint the members of the commission. The two would be to submit the charter to the voters, which that could be done at a regular special election. And it would take simple majority approval in order to for that charter to be adopted. So that's one way. But that's going to take some time. Because of the two elections that are required. And that would give the commission an opportunity to really form a well-thought-out charter and bring it to the city council. The charter can be very lengthy. It could be very large. There's examples of some charters that are very, could be very lengthy pages. And there's some that are very short and very specific. Or very brief, where they give the council the authority to do certain things. But the charter commission can look at the processes and then determine whether the city of Goleta would need a larger charter, a smaller charter, whether there should be a public process in this. The commission is really looked at as being the public process, but are there public workshops that should happen? That would be a matter that the commission would want to take up. How brief or how lengthy should this charter be? How detailed should it be? Those are all questions that would be answered through this process. The other manner in which a charter can be drafted would be through direct council action. And in this method, the council prepares a charter and submits it to voters. And again, this can be done through a regular or special election, and again, needs simple majority approval. Now, it's not written in the regulation that the council couldn't have public workshops or even a committee. It's not written that it cannot. And in fact, in the report, I mentioned that the city of Oakland used a committee to prepare the charter, but the council has really the authority over that charter and then puts it on the ballot. So the differences here is that you have the council giving that direction and working on it, and then you've got the charter process, which would require an election, and then that group, that commission, working on it, bringing it back to the council. So what are some disadvantages to chartering? A transition period. The transition period from developing the charter to implementing it. It could be a lengthy process. The use of staff time and city resources. So we know that building a charter is going to take some time. It is going to be an investment in resources, but not something that the city of Goleta couldn't overcome. But there is a disadvantage in that use of resources for a charter. Uncertainties. We don't know, with the law changing, we don't know whether the charter is protecting us necessarily from the change in legislation. It is so fluid. we're subject to legal challenges because if there is something that's taken up to the courts, it could affect the city of Goleta. You know, we may have a rule, a regulation that could change by the legal challenges. And that's why earlier in the report I was talking about, this is a fluid process. It does change with the legislation, and it does, the courts are the ones to determine what is a matter of municipal affair and what is a statewide concern. That can change by the court. May not change by the legislature, but it could change by the court. Charter amendments require vote. So if in the future there are charter amendments to a charter that's already been approved, they will require a vote by the voters of Goleta. So we'd have to put that into the election. And that was one of the concerns of the DEC, was that if the city of Goleta wanted to move forward with a charter city because it wants to develop its rules for elections and vacancies and qualifications of candidates, then it should be done before the district election. So all those matters are set in place before we go in there, because any changes, let's say there's a vacancy after the first district election, for us to go back and do that would require an election, and so it would not be implemented until after the election. If we have those rules in place now before we go into district elections, then we have those set rules. We don't have to so what the DEC is saying is anticipate a vacancy, anticipate some election procedures that we want to control at a local level, and anticipate those before 2022, so that if in case something happens, we don't have to wait for the next election in order to amend the charter and then implement. And that was the example that the city of Santa Barbara had. We'll talk a little more about that. Municipal affairs may erode over time due to state legislation and subsequent judicial review. We talked about that. And charter cities have not been spared state revenue takeaways. I mean, this is back in about 2011, 2012, when with the dissolution of redevelopment and the state takeaways, that's when you'll see many cities were looking into becoming charter cities because they wanted to be able to protect their assets. Not only redevelopment, but as you saw that the state's budget was starting to suffer, you started to see some changes in what cities were, the contribution cities were receiving. And so charter cities were looking at a way to protect their funding. Well, there's not, again, as we see the gap narrow, you're not seeing that the protection is there like it used to be. We talked back in the finance slide that there's opportunities for a charter city to have some, like a business license tax or the property transfer tax, impose those in ways that a general law city can't. There are still finance matters in which we can protect or create new revenue. But again, those are starting to narrow. Advantages to chartering. As we spoke earlier, there are some advantages, and we find those in kind of our everyday work as we're analyzing certain matters like the Board of Trustees, that we may come upon a state government code where there is an exemption if you're a charter city. So there are some advantages that we haven't really found yet, and maybe exploring it more and having specific areas we should look into may help. But some advantages to charting could allow, as I mentioned in the prior slide, could allow additional revenue measures for operations or capital projects, more flexibility in elections, may provide more local control. And I say may because we just don't know. And also it changes, it's fluid. So what might be working right now may not, you know, state legislation may change things down the road, such as in prevailing wage. Okay, so now to the District Election Committee and the election process and filling a vacancy. So if you remember when Ms. Inda came to talk to us, she talked about thinking about some areas in which it would benefit us to be a charter city. It would benefit us to have some local control over our election process. And the example that she talked about was the vacancy. And so in Santa Barbara some time ago, going into their district election process, after their district elections, they had a vacancy. And they didn't have a lined out way of filling that vacancy. It happened to be in a certain district. Well, the question was, how do we fill that vacancy? Do we do an at-large election? Or do we, well, it would be an at-large election, but the question is, but this person came out of this district. Why can't we have an election out of that district and replace the seat that's open from that district? Well, you couldn't do that because it wasn't in the city's charter, although they are a charter city. But what they didn't anticipate is this vacancy and how they would deal with it. So that's the example that she was concerned about, is let's anticipate some of those issues. And in pages four and five, you have the government code. As a general city, you have the procedures for an election process, a vacancy process. And, you know, it's pretty detailed, but it doesn't really refer to what happens if there is a vacancy in that district. How do you fill that vacancy? When you fill it is there. But it doesn't really talk about, it doesn't regulate what happens in a district election. And so that was the situation that happened in Santa Barbara, became very complicated. Well, they couldn't amend their charter until the next election or special election. And that was going to take some time. So what happens to that seat? Does it go vacant? Do they just appoint it? They have to go by whatever their charter said or whatever the state government code said. And that was very problematic for members of their community and for the district elections committee to see that there wasn't a process that was developed. So as I mentioned, in a charter city, the local government could develop whatever the qualifications will be for the council. Even in the district elections, it could also form its own procedures for an election, and then also be very detailed on how it provides for options for a vacancy, for example. So in looking at what the district elections committee is really concerned about, and why that question got to you, the Public Engagement Commission, it really surrounded this district election process. So I think that trying to get this long report kind of in a nutshell, and it's a very complex matter because, as I mentioned, we don't know specifically how certain areas may benefit or where there's advantages or disadvantages. You know, there is a financial consequence to becoming a charter city in the sense that to put the charter on the ballot, there's an expense to that. There is an expense every time we go for an amendment when one is needed. So there is an expense to it. I think the question would be, is it worth that process? Are there advantages to it that would weigh that process? So I probably gave you more questions than I have answers for, but I'm definitely interested in getting your feedback and any questions that I can't answer for you tonight. I could take a recommendation from you tonight. You have the report. You have advantages, disadvantages. Try to give you an overview of it so that you could provide a recommendation to the city council. But there might be some questions that you have that you want to continue to explore before you give a recommendation, and that's okay. Just want your input on that. So your recommendation could be that you're ready to make one to the city council, or that you want to continue to explore this and you have some things that are not quite answered yet. So love to hear your feedback.
So if your mic is on, use your little button to tell me that you want to speak. Thank you.
I don't know which way. Uh-huh.
Now I see.
Am I getting a red light?
There you go.
There we go.
So I don't know who went first, but I'll go on my right and go this way. Okay. So Miss Massey.
No, mine came on, but I'm
Okay. Yes.
Well, I am interested. Am I on? Yeah. I am interested in commenting. I feel we need desperately to think about what the function of the Public Engagement Commission is. And this question about the charter city, while I see into the reading for the District Election Commission, why they would wanted us to take it up, it seems that the whole move to a charter city has so many ramifications that have nothing to do with elections that, quite frankly, I don't feel like we, maybe the rest of you, I personally don't feel prepared to make a recommendation to the city council to take this up unless they want to do the investigation of every detail that has to do with land use and transportation and the schools and the taxes and so on. Because it seems to me that we're being asked to consider making a fairly major change to the way government is orchestrated and run in order to fill a vacancy, okay, when there are district elections. And what I don't even know from the whole report, and I read the report and I listened to you again, I have no idea how we would fill a vacancy under general law right now. I mean, what is the way we do it? Yes, it's listed here. The timing is listed here. I don't understand what the problem is. I saw the problem for Santa Barbara, but they were a charter city. We are not a charter city, so what would be our problem if we needed to fill a vacancy? Because if that's the major issue, I at least need an answer to that question. So at least in the narrow scope about which we are organized, we at least could have an opinion about that. I have no opinions about the land use business and the tax business and all of that. This is way beyond anything that I am in a position to evaluate. So I do that honestly. And if somebody at this point really hasn't, Carmen, if you have an answer to the question of what would happen if we had a vacancy, I mean, what would happen in the city council if we had a vacancy suddenly in the city council under the current conditions? So even if there were districts, what would happen? You know, so what would it require? Because if it's not a whole lot worse than what we just saw Santa Barbara go through, you know, where there's appointments and specials, how is that different? So long as it is about the district, right? So I don't know an answer, and I'm open to everybody telling me how it would be different from the point of view of our work on public engagement. I mean, the only other thing I would say is, yes, if everybody wanted to do the charter business and move to that process, then sure, let's have an open process. But an open process meaning let's have the public be in on it, let's have a commission and all of that, that would be part of public engagement. But I'm not sure we should go down this road.
Thank you, Commissioner Schneider. Just to answer the very narrow question,
right.
The narrow question of how we would fill a vacancy going into district elections, assuming right. we're in district elections and there is a vacancy. As a general law city, the city council has the authority to appoint someone and, right. and appoint someone from that district. So they're the ones, it's the council that has that authority. Mm-hmm. Or they may call a special election. But the election would be a one not just of that district. It would be a at large. It'd be an at large election. So it's not. It would be the election for that seat, but it would not be specific to that district. And that's where the DEC is concerned that if the council has the authority to appoint, it's not the voice of the community. It's not a vote of the community. If we go into the special election and the council chooses to go into a special election, it's not restricted to that district.
But
it's
that's what I don't understand. Yeah. If you already have district elections and people are already voting within their districts, why wouldn't a replacement for a vacancy be a district election? That's the part that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would it suddenly be a city election if you're not having city elections, you're having district elections already?
That's right. It's a district elections, but it's an at-large election. It's a citywide election. It's not an election just for that district.
It's a flaw in the law.
Yeah. Right. It's an inconsistency.
It's a flaw in the general law business?
In the state, it's in the elections code, in the government code for general law cities.
All right, well, my question is answered, but I still stand on the rest of what I said in terms of a move from one place to another.
I just wanted to take a moment to remind the rest of the commissioners, at least from my understanding, that the recommendation is to make a recommendation to the city council whether the city should continue exploring this question, not to make a recommendation they go one way or another. That could be our recommendation.
Okay.
So that's what our task was.
That's
it's to put it back on their lap to say, hey, yes, I think it's worth your consideration.
Cool.
So that's what we're really talking about. Is it worth their consideration? So there are a couple lights on. May you turn off your light unless you have another question? Yes, Ms. Schneider, thank you. We'll go Ms. Uribe, Ms. Bliss, and back to Ms. Massey.
Okay, so I had a feeling while you were explaining all of this to us in a very clear way, I had the same feeling as to, wow, so there may be some taxes that we're going to be able to collect, but maybe there will be some taxes that we will not be able to collect, and I have no idea about that. And it's scary to make a decision about revenue and things like we don't know a thing about, or at least I don't. And so for that reason, I think that either somebody answers Ms. Snyder's question about why are we put in this position, or most definitely, if the answer is okay, let's continue. We need a study, and the study that I would recommend to is a comparison of cities that would tell us a little bit more how cities that made the change, did that work for them? Did that didn't work? Or is it possible to go back if we don't like it? I mean, I'm totally not knowing anything about all of this, even though I understand the fluidity of it and that there's not going to be all of the answers at once. But at least, basically, I want to know if other cities have regretted making the change.
Yeah, I mean, along the same line. So I feel like I wouldn't feel confident making a recommendation one way or the other, but I do want additional information to inform that recommendation. And in particular, I want to understand how long the charter city option has existed and what the sort of rationale was for creating that as an option. I'm kind of trying to understand like what the cities represented in the charter cities list have in common, because there are cities that are like humongous and there are tiny cities. They don't really seem to have anything in common, and so I can't understand the gist of why cities would choose that. I did, similar to what you just asked, I'd be curious to know if any cities have gone to charter city and then gone back to the general law city. And then the last thing that I was thinking might possibly be a benefit of being a charter city, but I don't know, is whether it changes the dynamic with the state. So because charter cities have this municipal law, and it sounds like there's a bit of a struggle between the state and the cities in instances, does that charter city acting somehow like then influence state law, and could that be beneficial for the whole state? I don't know how you would look into that, but I find that to be like a compelling thing to dig into.
I just wanted to bring the attention to the commission on page 18 of your staff report. It's an attachment. You'll find a history of the municipal home rule, and it starts back between 1850 and 1879, and it's titled Before the Home Rule, and then it talks about 1879, so where all cities granted inherent home rule. So as to Commissioner Bliss's question is, How long has this existed? You know, I think that this, that attachment will provide a little bit, a good background as to why, and as to when and why. And it really is about having local government control. But it's existed for a really long time. And that's just that's just a little bit of information for that one question that you have. I did take note of your other questions, and I realize that this is a very complex and very difficult matter, especially if you're not in local government. It could be very complex, and that's why I had mentioned during this report is hopefully I didn't raise more questions than probably did raise more questions than answers. But there are going to be things that you probably want to know more of before you can really arrive to any type of decision. And that's okay. This is an exploration process.
Ms. Massey.
Well, I've read a lot more than just this because we were discussing it a couple of years ago. And so I have more of a feeling for what I think I have more of a feeling. But my feeling is, for one thing, it's easier for citizens to understand the whole process if they're moving here new from someplace else because so many are already general law. They're used to that procedure. They're comfortable with it. But some other points that hit me in what was said this evening is that this city has so many other important issues that haven't been dealt with yet, number one being the zoning ordinance, which we're working on now, but there's a habitat management plan. I mean, I can't think of all of them now, but we have 5 or 6 years of things that need to be done that are, I think, far more important than this. And the simple solution to the district election arrangement when you need to replace a vacancy is, and I think it's because we elected them, they represent us, they would understand that they need to appoint just from people from that district to that district and not go into the, nobody wants the extra cost of elections. We all try to avoid, well, the city tries to avoid that. I keep calling me part of the city. I
feel you are part of the city.
Well,
you're a citizen.
I've been in to City Hall before the original one opened, and I haven't stopped coming. I'm sure there are people who wished I had, but nonetheless. But I think it's a waste of time and energy on staff, on city council. Let's do some of the things that we desperately need. We desperately need a zoning code that matches our general plan. And that, I think, should come before we consider anything else. I know they're working on it, and hopefully the first part of the year we'll get that.
Thank you.
I'm not really interested in working on this when there are other more important things. And getting more public engagement is really necessary, too, before you do something like that, it would seem to me. Because if we have this kind of audience...
Thank you for being here, by the way. but we need more people participating.
So that's my 2 cents worth.
Thank you.
Initially, when I came in, I had been reading on this, and I was leaning towards recommending Charter City, the charter, because... it actually gives you a home rule. It gives the individual citizen, the voter, a constitution in a way of home rule. It makes them engaged more. It also increases the opportunity for a strong mayor. But I also, at that point, I also have concerns, and I have now, as Nichols said, more questions. I would like to know if there have been cities that have said, you know, as many of the my fellow commissioners have said, I wish we hadn't gone down this road. Even though we're just recommending whether they should continue to research this, I would like to get that information. Because maybe some cities along the way said, well, you know, it looked like a good idea. It sounded good at the time. I wish I hadn't done it. So I would like to get more information as far as cities that have thought about it, or what is the process to go back again? Let's say we do decide to go to charter city. What is the process to then, if we have second thoughts, and then we go back, how would that be? So I did have some concerns on that. So I'm right now, I want more information. And I'm still invested in the part that by doing this recommendation, let's say we do go down, just speculating, we go down that road, we'd have that commission to engage individuals, the individual citizen out there. What do they think? It has to go to a vote anyway. And again, we don't want to incur increased costs. But at the same time, let's say there are just some folks out there that say, you know what, I like that, having that home rule, that my city constitution in a way, my investment in this city. So I'd like to find out that information, and before I could safely make a recommendation, I also want to know, what is the direction of the city council? How do they feel? I mean, if I can get a little bit of input from there, from that point of view, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to Commissioner Ibarra's point, yes, okay, I got some good questions for you. If the commission wishes to continue to pursue this, then staff could come back at a later date and bring you some additional responses. So that's going to be up to this group whether we're returning back. But I also did want to say that the council wants to hear from you what your thoughts as community members, knowing some of this information, they want to hear from you. We wouldn't take this matter to the council to come back to you. They want to hear it in the other area. So I don't think we'll get an opportunity to pull the council and bring that. That probably would break the Brown Law. The Brown Act violation anyway. So I wouldn't be able to give you that. The other thing I wanted to bring up, I didn't put it as my part of presentation, but it is in the report, is that this commission had talked about the 4-year term for the mayor. And while there is a process on a general law, and you recall that in 2016, mm-hmm. the voters elected for a two-year term for the mayor, for the elected mayor, that was done through a vote because we're a general law city. Now, if you're a charter city, we don't have to go through an election. That type of rule would be under the local regulation, under the, you know, the local rules. Not saying one is better than the other, but you know, that's an example of this. And this commission talked about that. This commission talked about how maybe it makes better sense to have a 4-year term for the mayor so that the mayor is not in constant campaign mode. And you brought up the strong mayor, so that's why I'm bringing this kind of out of context here. But that would be something that you could consider. Again, not something that a general law city has to. We don't need to be a charter city in order to. We can take that question back to the voters. Mm-hmm. So there is a process for it, one way or the other. It's just a different process. I just wanted to bring that comment back.
Thank you. I just wanted to add a few thoughts. Just a couple questions. Has the city council at all had any discussion around this at all up to this point in time?
Not to my knowledge, not since I've been here. So no, they have not had that discussion. Again, it came out of that settlement agreement, mm-hmm. and the DEC wanted so it was basically delegated to the PEC to start that discussion first.
And so a couple other observations, I would say it would be helpful for us, I believe, if we had a better sense of the timeline, like from start to end, how long does it take on either path, that would be really helpful. Then in terms of, you know, looking at charter amendments that require votes, a couple of questions that came to my mind. How often has this occurred with any other charter cities? You brought up the example of the city of Santa Barbara. But does it come up that often? Is it something that we should really concern ourselves with or not? That made me think as well, in terms of your presentation and the example of the city of Santa Barbara. about how much work it would really take to make sure that everything is covered that should be covered at this point in time without having to go back and amend the charter, and what that would look like. You know, how much would that entail in terms of work for staff and the city, and what that would be in terms of reasonableness, right? That would be really helpful, at least in my viewpoint, to get a better sense of whether it's worth the investment or not, or whether I would feel comfortable making a recommendation for the city to continue to explore this question a little more. And then the other question I had had to do with, you talk about some of the uncertainties that do happen, which a lot of them we really can't control. But maybe one thing might be helpful is maybe a more recent scan of what are the changes that have had an impact on charter cities, and sort of what that sort of lay of the land looks like would be really helpful for my way of thinking. Like, what are we talking about and how much? You did give some examples, and that was really helpful. But having a little bit more of a scan would be also beneficial in my eyes. Okay. We had a couple of other people have lights. I will go to Ms. Bliss, and then I think Ms. Schneider, and then Ms. Uribe.
Sorry, I just wanted to expand on my idea of like what kind of an influence the charter cities might have on the state, if at all. On the flip side, I know you had mentioned the one situation where people went to charter city because they wanted to like protect some source of funding. I don't remember the details or the name of it, but have there been cases where like the situation of being a charter city has essentially created like a punitive situation with the state? So where they've decided to collect taxes in some way, and then has the state ever opted then not to give them some pool of funding to like offset that cost? I guess the whole dynamic between the state and the charter city, I'm interested in a lot of details about that.
Listening to everyone, I'm still interested, I think, in the narrow question rather than the big question. I think home rule is a sort of interesting concept. Truthfully, I'm still getting over the shock that the voters in Goleta voted in favor of the salary increase, okay? But that's very simple. This is not very simple. I mean, this is so complicated. I can't even imagine the room in which people would be genuinely interested in thinking about this, unless somehow this was put forward as a sort of exercise in democracy that's only being done in Goleta, you know, right now in this point in time. But the narrow question, I want to know the answer to this, and I don't know that we can easily get it, but how is it possible in the narrow scope of this commission for us to have some influence or force the city council, I'm putting it that way purposefully for the moment, to put them on record about how they would handle this city council, but any coming city council, to put them on record as saying, if there's a vacancy, once there are district elections, if there's a vacancy, this is the way we will proceed. That we will do appointments from within the district. In other words, why can't we get what we want in a simpler way? It may not be the most legally, it may not be written into procedure and statute, but I'm wondering about that, because there is a part of what of our work that is about moral suasion, and that is about educating not just everybody and ourselves, but the city council as well. So is there a kind of way to force the hand of the council to be thinking about procedurally, they should be thinking about what's going to happen with district elections, not just us. Some of them are going to find themselves without a seat, but we'll leave that aside for the moment. But there is this question of, is there a way to affect the change, the narrow change we're talking about, without going suggesting this whole process? And I don't know if there's an answer. I don't know if there are answers that are good examples from general law cities about what they've done when they've moved to district elections, because there are general law cities that have moved to district elections. What have they done? What have they written into the law? What have they written into their practice? That would be another kind of question I would have that would be helpful to me making a decision about what to recommend.
Thank you, Commissioner Schneider. You've taken note of that. I do want to bring your attention to page 4 of the staff report, where in the second paragraph, it talks about that the government code allows for the city council to appoint, well, it doesn't allow, it states that the city council has the option to appoint or call a special election. On a district election, they would appoint from that district. So the question isn't whether they appoint from that district. It's whether it should be the voice of the council. Should it be an appointment by the council, or should it be a voter decision, a voter appointment, or a voter election? And that's where the deck, their question was, should we be leaving that appointment to the council, or should this be an election? So Commissioner Schneider, just to clarify, the point is that the city council could very well appoint someone from that. If they're going to appoint, it would be from that district. But there's more to
statute,
but yes, by government code. But there was more to your question, and we could certainly look at some examples of what the practice of other general law cities are. Now, it doesn't mean that would be the practice of this council,
right,
or future councils.
Right.
You know, this current council might do it one way, and you know, 8 years from now, that council can do it a different way. But we could bring you some information on that if the commission wishes to continue considering this item. Mm-hmm. That would be a question that we could look into.
Yes, Ms. Oribe.
Okay. When you were talking about, we don't know the questions yet, all of the questions anyways, we know some. So I immediately went to think, okay, so how are we going to know all the questions to avoid all of these expensive amendments? So I was wondering if it is, are we going to get all the amendments and of a lot of different cities, or how are we going to come up with our own questions or to answers to those questions, basically? So that seems to me like a daunting endeavor, but anyways, I would like to know how. The last thing I would like for our city to go through is Brexit. If you you know that people vote and everybody's like, yeah, let's do this, and at the very last minute people are so unhappy about it, you know. So, and I have no clue whether this proposal of a charter will cause that or not. So I'm not advocating at this time either way, but that's, I guess, my fear.
Thank you. Any other comments? If there's none, I would say at this point in time that the commission, to wrap it up, would like to have more information. We continue the discussion at a future date. We do have some questions that are outstanding, and I think would also help us all to kind of figure out where we stand ultimately. And I think that coming back again at a future date where we can have a little more of a conversation again.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
can I just chime in here real quick?
Sure.
One of the questions I think supersedes all of them is the timeline.
Yeah.
I think once we start to know what the timeline is,
yes,
if we were to do this, then I think we can work from there. But to me, that's
the overall timeline. How long does it take to do a chart? Yes, I agree. Yes. Thank you.
I'm just going to really kind of interject very quickly here. So, so the timeline is really based on how much, how much of a comprehensive charter are we looking at?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is whether it's a council directed process or there's a commission. So we know that the commission process, mm-hmm, is going to take at least 2 election cycles to get a charter. Let's say it's approved, voter approved, take it to a ballot. It's going to take at least 2 election cycles.
Mm-hmm.
One could, and it could be through a special election and through a general election, but so it could take some time to get there. On a council directed process, probably could get there quicker. But in order for us to get it in the 2020 ballot,
we probably would need to have all that process completed by July of 2020 in order to get it to the county and to get it on the on the ballot. So it could be a very lengthy process. And then you have to think about how much time then in between do we have to do public workshops, get public input, and so on and so forth. So it could be a daunting process. I mean, it will be. It's a very comprehensive process. And it just, you have to look at your election periods and then work your way back. And that determines how much time you have to work on it.
Correct. And I think that's what we're looking for, to kind of have a better sense of that timeline, at least have it in front of us so we can kind of consider that and, you know, have, kind of start building our own pro and con list in our head. And it's like, okay, this makes sense, this does not make sense. It gives us a better sense of what really we're asking the city council to consider, and then therefore staff to consider in terms of how much time it's going to take.
Chair Paz, if you don't mind, if we could get a motion and go through that process so we can put it on the record.
I would like to actually make the motion, and I will need a second, but make the motion that we direct staff for them to come back at a future date and time to be able to answer the questions and comments that we put forth tonight. So that's my motion.
I second.
Oh. We have a second, 2 seconds. Ms. Uribe, and so.
Thank you.
Yes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. And then we can move to director's report.
Well, thank you. I think I'm going to take this one tonight. We wanted to follow up on a couple of items that the commission had asked about previously. And one of those was to put a kiosk at the Goleta Valley Community Center. And I wanted to tell you that our park, that is actually the Johnny D. Wallace Park, very close to the community center, we have already ordered the materials to have kiosks there where we will be putting English and Spanish information regularly. But in addition, we're looking at using those big cabinets when you walk into the community center for English and Spanish information as well. Another item that the commission had asked for follow-up on was whether or not it would be possible to allow for ride-alongs with the sheriff's office. And we researched that and found that it's a lot more complicated than just putting the information out there. The sheriff's staff have to have scheduling availability, but in addition, every person that goes on a ride-along needs to have a background check. So it's not only expensive, it's a resource issue as well. So we thought we would consider giving that as a perk for those people that completed the LEAD Goleta program. And so anyone that was interested in doing that, we would put them on the list, and as time became available, they would be able to take advantage of that. So those were those two items that you had asked for follow-up on. I also wanted to let you know that we launched our LEAD Goleta program, Learn, Empower, Advocate, and Discuss, on Tuesday, and within 24 hours, we had 15 applications. Mm. We are 15 applications of those over the age of 21. So that means if all of those people actually live in the city of Goleta, there are only 5 more spots available. Oh. And that will kick off in February. And finally, we put out an RFP for Spanish engagement services, and that closed, and we'll be talking to the candidates next week. But we have another interesting possibility for Spanish engagement services that I'm looking into, and our Spanish working group, I think I'm going to start calling them our Spanish engagement advisory group, continues to meet and have good ideas, and so we'll be meeting again late January, early February.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Can I say something about that?
Go ahead.
So I was really happy to see those two things, the consultant, calling for a consultant, and the academy opportunity. And even happier to know of the will, how well received it was. So about the academy, I have a question that's very important to me. I did see the English flyer, but I didn't see the Spanish flyer. And I was wondering also, related to that same academy, whether there's going to be Spanish interpretation during all the six sessions. How many?
Six sessions. Uh-huh. Since this is our inaugural program, we decided that it would be very complicated to provide it in both English and Spanish because it's very interactive. It's a dialogue. It's not a formal process where we're all sitting on a dais. It's 25 people and staff having a conversation. And so we wanted to do our first one, at least all in English, and that is why you didn't see a Spanish version. In addition, our Spanish engagement working group told us that an academy program like this is too complex for the people that are limited English speaking. You really need to have a program before that to just tell basics of this is what a city is, like a one night, couple hour session of this is what a city is and this is why you would even want to get involved in a LEAD Goleta program in the future.
Well, I would like to take an issue with that because Spanish speakers know what a city is. They know what we're talking about. They may not know the particulars of how a city works, but that's what the academy is all about. So I would prefer, and I don't know the rest of my colleagues here, but I would prefer that from the get-go we have the English and Spanish. And this is, I'm surprised because I know some people on that committee that you're talking about, and some of them are very good companies for interpreting and translation, and they know exactly how to do simultaneous. So I don't see a problem for such professionals to be able to accomplish that at all.
It's a good point, given that this is our first run at it. So I think we, at least the staff, need to understand how it's going to work. So we hear you. We do need to kind of give it a first run and make sure that, you know, we know all the any hiccups that we might run into. So, yeah, that's a very good point. As Ms. Cantella was saying is that, you know, it's going to be like breakout groups. And so we have to see how that is even going to work before we can say, okay, this is how we can include the Spanish-speaking members. This is how we could do it. We don't really even know how we're going to do it with the English yet, how it's going to work. So I think you're right. I think, but we need a little time, and certainly would take that into consideration for a second go-around. But right now, we just have to see how it's going to work and then figure out how can we incorporate that. I think what Valerie was saying is not that we did think it out. Her Spanish group, advisory group, is saying that setup might not work for the Spanish-speaking community. That's the feedback we're getting. So we hear your opinion, but that's what we got from the advisory group. We know we need to incorporate it because that's the whole point, right, is we want to be inclusive to everybody. We just don't know how we're going to do that yet. So give us an opportunity to do the first run at it, learn from that, and then I think we could serve both the English-speaking and Spanish community better in that with that LEAD Goleta.
Thank you.
I have to agree with staff on this right now. I think since it is the very first one, I think there's going to be some adjustments, some hurdles, and I hope that when this first one becomes successful, I think that we can start looking at incorporating interaction with the Spanish-speaking population, which I agree is important, but I want the process to start out correctly. And if we can start it off and have the bugs that will eventually come out, I want those to be fixed, because the worst thing you want to do is then try and throw things together and just hope that it works. And then if it's not successful, then you're going to have individuals that might not want to participate anymore, or just say, you know what, this is just too complicated. I want to make it an easy process. So I agree, let's work on it. Let's make this one successful. Let's learn from it, and then let's go forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Future agenda items? None. All right. I would like to adjourn. Thank you all.
Think so little of me, they allow you to go. When you're near, there's such an air of spring about it. I can hear a lot.